Hey, this is Dave Burgess, and you are listening to The Dave Burgess Show, where we talk education, lifestyle, entrepreneurship, fitness, wellness, principles of success, interview elite performers in their field, and most importantly, cover topics that will empower, inspire, and uplift you. Let's go. Hey, welcome to episode 7 of the Dave Burgess Show, and I have a special guest with us today. I have Sean Gaylord. Sean is the principal of Moore Magnet School in North Carolina. He is the host of the Principal Liners Notes podcast, and he is also the author of The Pepper Effect, Tap into the Magic of Creativity, Collaboration, and Innovation, a Dave Burgess Consulting Incorporated book. So always happy to have one of our own authors on the podcast. Sean, welcome to the show.
Hey, Dave, thanks for having me, and grateful to be a part of this gig, man.
Absolutely. So I have a bunch of different directions to go, and I think I know where I want to start. Sean, who are the Sky Dogs?
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, the Sky Dogs, Dave, I mean, you know, often mentioned in the same sentence as De La Soul or the Beatles or the Rolling Stones, but that was a little band that I was in college with many lineups. We weren't very good, but we had a lot of fun playing. So somewhere there are some bootleg tapes circulating of 15-minute versions of Hey Jude or Dear Prudence or La Bamba.
Okay, gosh. And so what did you play in the band?
I played guitar. I am a rhythm guitarist and that is a frustrated drummer. So I play guitar very percussively. I like to think along the lines of somebody like a Richie Havens. Kind of a person. So I play guitar.
Awesome. Okay. And so now as a guitar player, is that something, do you still practice, still play?
I do a little bit of that, not as often as I'd like to. We'll kind of use that as a release. I do a little bit of ukulele as well. For my school podcast, I lay down a couple of guitar tracks on a couple of songs, but not as often as I probably should these days. But when I do play, I love it, and I have a lot of good times with it.
Yeah, and so I'll have to get you together with my teen Finn. Finn is an avid ukulele player and also getting into the guitar more and more these days. Now, as someone who plays, I know lots of people who play guitar, and a lot of times they are avid collectors of guitars, and they go play guitars in stores. They can't wait. They have their eye on the latest thing and what they want to, you know, I can't wait to have this model or whatever it might be. Would you consider yourself to be that kind of a guitar fan as well, where you're always looking for the latest thing?
I'm an oldie guy. So I like to look at the vintage guitars. So being a kind of a Beatles guy, which you may have heard of that band, I like to look at the old Rickenbackers or Gretsch guitars and those things. So if I'm ever within a store or used guitar store, that's what I kind of gravitate towards, like the old stuff, the vintage stuff. That's where my heart is.
Gotcha. Now, we have, of course, connected on social media many times. We have been in various Google Hangouts about books and book pitches and all that sort of stuff. But we also met face-to-face one time, and that was at, I believe, the Principals Conference. Philadelphia, I think, is where it was.
That's right, man.
And we had a unique experience there. And now I'm trying to remember if this was your first time or if it was not if you were not one of the first-time people, but we went to a Brazilian steakhouse.
Yes.
And now, was that your first time at a Brazilian steakhouse or no?
That was my first time. And you were a very helpful guide and teacher that night, because I remember you had said, there's going to be a lot of meat. I remember that. And I remember too, this kind of bold, like, no salad. No, I want the meat. And I remember you encouraged me to to do the same. And I mean, that was probably some of the best steak I ever had in my life. So that was a great time, man.
So I can remember training you in the fine art of the green light and the red light.
That's right.
What was green light and red light? What are you talking about? Oh, listen, you're going to have this thing on at your table. Put it on green and they'll just keep coming by with meat, different types of meat, and just cut it for you, right? And when you need a break, when you need to pause, when you need to catch up, just turn it over to red and they'll stop coming. But when that thing comes green, you just better expect that they're going to be coming to your table.
I remember you said that. And I seem to recall at one point, I don't even think I went red light. I think I stayed green to the bitter end.
You never tapped out. See, that's a person who knows how to be at a Brazilian steakhouse. Yeah, I can remember telling you, like, listen, the sucker move is to fill up at the salad bar.
That's right.
What they want you to do. You know, they're going to bring you all this bread, you know, all that kind of stuff. That's the sucker move is to fill up on that stuff. Like, leave that stomach empty. And like, this place is about the meat. And I apologize to any of my vegan fans who might be listening right now.
We do apologize, but that was such a cool move. And I remember there was disdainful looks because I followed your lead because I remember I'm looking around. I had never, and again, the vegans, you probably turned this off. It's okay. But I remember that don't sucker move. And there was disdainful looks at you because you were corrupting me. And I'm like, no, this is the captain, man. I want the experience.
Yeah, so this reminds me, Shelley has a friend who a famous line at the buffets in Las Vegas, going through the lines, and someone that was with them took a couple of rolls off of the, you know, some bread off of the thing and put on the tray, and they just turned and looked at them and said, "Bread is for suckers." So, yeah, I never forgot that. In the for the Brazilian steakhouse, that I do believe the salad bar is for suckers.
It is, and you know, I'm sure it's a very fine salad, fine preparations, but yeah, that was a great moment. That was a great memory.
Yeah, hey, let's face it. That's not why you go to the Brazilian steakhouse. You don't go for the salad.
No, you don't. It's like I'm going to the beach for, you know, not the sand or the sun. I'm going, you know, for, I don't know, whatever that you don't go to the beach for. That's what I can't even come up with the idea because I'm now I want a Brazilian steak right now.
I'm ready to go. So next time we get together, it's going to have to be a redo.
You got it, man.
Yeah. All right. Hey, so Sean, I'm going to tell you something I never told you before.
Okay.
And Sean, this is what it is. The Pepper Effect. To me, The Pepper Effect is one of the flagship books of the Dave Burgess Consulting Incorporated line, and I'll tell you why.
Oh, man.
It's because we talk to people about writing their manifesto. And we say, hey, listen, don't write something you're a little interested in. Don't write something because you think it's going to sell well, because you think it fills a gap in the marketplace or anything like that. We want you to write the core message that you want to share with other educators in the world. And manifesto is this word that gets a bad rap because when you usually hear it, it's when a serial killer leaves one behind. You know, they'll say they killed 12 people, left a manifesto in the basement or something like that, right?
Yeah.
And we look at it in the positive sense. That this is your legacy, this is your mic drop, and that what is unique about you, I tell teachers this all the time, what is unique about you, your particular strengths and talents, your voice that you add into the classroom is what's going to make you most powerful and effective. And what you did is so symbolic of our line, and that you took education, something you're wildly passionate about, and you took, of all things, the Beatles, something you were also wildly passionate about, mashed it together and created this book, this manifesto. And so when people talk about the Dave Burgess Consulting line, I a lot of times point to The Pepper Effect as a flagship book because,
man,
think about this. I tell people, hey, listen, lots of education books, you could just change the names on the bottom of the book and it wouldn't matter. But the idea of changing the names on the bottom of our books would be ridiculous. It'd be ludicrous. It wouldn't work. Who else could be on the bottom of the Pepper Effect than Sean Gaylord? And so maybe take us back to where that inspiration came from and kind of what gave you the courage to pitch that project to us and how that all went down.
Well, Dave, I don't even know how to recover from that. And I'm very, very honored by that. And you, my friend, you know, I'm in, it's like a life debt. I'm like the Chewbacca to your Han Solo. And so I'm very grateful that you took something and empowered what, you know, when people think of education, they don't think of the Beatles, but it is something that's very much part of my core. So I could go on and on about the Beatles, but a long story short is a teacher, my fifth grade teacher, Mrs. McMonagle, who believed in me and who saw something in me that I didn't see in myself and led me down this journey with this band that really, not only did I love their music, but they inspired me and inspired me to become a teacher, inspired me to become a better person and inspired me to kind of help shade and color my lessons, so to speak. So long story short, the Beatles to me represent kind of what an education, how sometimes we take the impossible and make it possible and make it real. And you know, I write a lot about, you know, Sergeant Pepper and the Beatles, but that's really the essence of that book is you had four guys who saw something in their music, had a very clear vision, and did not let negativity, did not let naysayers, did not let the status quo dictate what they were going to do. And to me, I thought, you know, there's a lesson in that in education, and I've lived it. You know, I lived it as a teacher, I lived it as a principal. I'm still living that. And then the other thing too about the Beatles is often, you know, we put them on the same level as like they created masterpieces. Like Sgt. Pepper was a masterpiece. You know, Bob Dylan and Highway 61, that's a masterpiece. Da Vinci and Mona Lisa, that's a masterpiece. And I thought, you know, we don't do that enough in education. We don't think of what we're doing as educators as there's an artistry to it. You know, we talk about standards, we talk about testing, but man, what we're doing for kids and what we're doing for each other is we're creating something that's timeless and lasting. Like a masterpiece. And I thought, like, when the Beatles created Sgt. Pepper, I mean, I don't think they said, oh, we're going to write a masterpiece, but they knew that they wanted to do something bold and different. So I thought there were some lessons there, you know, that could be gleaned and that you know, that anybody, you don't have to be a Beatles fan to like the Pepper Effect. And that's the other thing too. And I think, again, you so nobly do that in terms of, and you exemplify that and exemplify that with Teach Like a Pirate. It's just, what is your passion? And don't compromise that passion. Don't compromise what you're doing for kids. Don't compromise what you're doing for kids, because if you believe in it and you're passionate about it, it's good. And be relentless in that. And so I'm honored, Dave, to be a small piece of many masterpieces that you are creating and that you're helping to create and bring into the world. So it's a two-way street, brother.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we're honored to have you in the DBC family. And I love what you said about creating a masterpiece and kind of that larger vision. I talk to educators all the time about embracing the mightier purpose of being an educator. And I love that you try to draw people's mindset to that larger vision of what we're doing. And it can be a masterpiece. And it's not just about coming in and punching the clock. It's about collaborating with each other and making something truly powerful, something truly important. And so I love that masterpiece mindset. It's fantastic. Now, in the Pepper Effect, there's a few things I want to touch on. And one of them is ignoring the naysayers.
Yeah.
And so you have had some naysayers, and I have famously had some naysayers, and we share some of the same naysayers, by the way.
We do. Yeah.
And so why do you think it's so important that you not let them stand in the way of that masterpiece that you're trying to create?
So if we think back to the Beatles, January 1962, okay? It was John Lennon, Paul McCartney, George Harrison, and Pete Best. Pete Best was on drums. And they had their very first record audition for Decca Records. And they failed. They didn't get the contract. And in fact, they were told, Qatar groups, their manager was told, Mr. Epstein, Brian Epstein, Qatar groups are on their way out. Now, Beatles didn't stop there. They were devastated, but they did not allow that statement to stop them from their vision of, we want to create music. We want to be bigger than Elvis Presley. We want to do something timeless and lasting. So they threw everything out the window pretty much. They decided to focus on writing their own songs. They got rid of their drummer, Pete Best, great guy. Pete, if you're watching, you know, I love you and I love what you did. But they got a different drummer. They got Ringo. And somehow that four-way synergy worked. Same thing when the Beatles were making Sgt. Pepper. They had stopped touring, which was at the time a very lucrative practice, but they decided we're going to go in the studio and we're going to record. We're going to focus on recording work. Well, the press, British press, were like, these guys are washed up. They're done. They're over. And Paul McCartney, very famously, and I write about this in the book, you know, he's reading this and he's going, you know what? You just wait. You just wait. We're making this great album. Yeah, the Beatles are washed up. Sure. You don't know what we've got in our pockets. So I say that in that there's a lot of negativity out there and there's a lot of folks that say don't. And there's a lot of folks that say stop or how could you or why could you? But imagine if the Beatles had allowed that to happen. I'm going to tell you then this African American brother would not have been empowered to write a book and to teach and to choose a noble profession. If they had told Gandhi when they threw him off the train in South Africa when he was practicing law there, and if they, you know, if he allowed that to stop him, you know, Susan B. Anthony. I mean, I can, you know, you kind of get my point here. Is that there is greatness within all of us, and if we allow those voices to hinder us. Now, sometimes though, naysayers may, to me, you know, I say ignore the naysayers, but I probably should add another sentence to that. Ignore the naysayers and learn from them or something like that. Maybe that's another book down the line, because sometimes those naysayers can empower us to, you know what, I'm going to prove to you that you're wrong. I'm going to show you that you know, Thank you for telling me that I can't do, because you know what? Now you've given me more power to show that I can go forward, or that we can move forward, or whatever it may be. So, you know, those, they're out there, man. And you know, yeah, that we can get in our feelings, and I've gotten into my feelings. I know, you know, folks can be disrespectful, but there is a fine line between naysaying and reasonable dissent, or challenging you to be better or to do better or to think about things differently. So, but they can be callous, man, and they can be cruel. But I use that as fuel to do better and to be better and try to learn from it and not to let it stop me or others, you know, from either creating a masterpiece or doing something noble and good for somebody else. It's hard, man.
Yeah, it is hard. What I've told people several times is the kind of people that say, hey, just let it slide, don't let it bother you, they've never had it happen.
Yeah.
Because if it's easy to say that if you haven't been the target of it, but once you're a target of it, you realize it is going to bother you. It's just a matter of what do you do with it from there. Are you going to allow that to stop you? Or are you going to allow that to turn you back? Or like you said, are you going to use that as fuel to motivate you and say, like, you know what, like this is not going to stop me. This is going to push me forward and I'm going to get past it. That's not an easy thing to do all the time, but no. You cannot hope to accomplish anything significant without having some of that happen to you. And so I can remember a person telling, I was complaining about these people that were trolling me and saying these things. And they're like, listen, if you weren't doing anything significant, you would never hear from anybody. You know, it's like, if once you put your work out into the world, then there's going to be friction. And if your work is pushing the edge, there's going to be extra friction, and you can just expect that and see it as a compliment.
And to build upon that, I mean, somewhere, someplace, you know, the world needs your voice. There's somebody out there that needs your message or needs your story or needs your gift. Todd Whitaker taught me that. And actually it was kind of a big inspirational force when I was writing The Pepper Effect. And I remember I was, you know, I don't know, down in the dumps about something. I don't know if I can pull this off, man. And, you know, I'm going to talk to this crazy bald headed guy in a few weeks. And I don't know. And I remember he said to me, no, the world needs your story. The world needs your voice. Somebody does. And that kind of turned a little light switch on in me. And I share that in that, for folks that are watching, whatever idea, whatever masterpiece that you're playing with, everybody has that power to create and to make something lasting. Because somewhere, somebody needs your gift or needs your voice, and you'd be surprised of the impact that we have. So I those naysayers, man, they can get in your head, man. But sometimes I try to, okay. Maybe you don't want to celebrate Monday. Okay, that's fine. We'll celebrate Tuesday. That's cool. You know, or don't celebrate at all. You know what? Now maybe we'll celebrate Wednesday now, just to be a wise guy. I don't know. So.
Yeah. Well, and when as a music fan, I'll bring this one out for you. And if what you're doing is a breakthrough, then it's probably all the more likely that you're going to face pushback. And when I think about that, I think about, say, like 1965 Dylan at the Newport Folk Festival and plugging in and going electric in front of his own fans, a folk crowd, right? And it was sometimes some of his biggest supporters that were the most offended by, like, how could you, of all people, plug in and go electric? And so sometimes that those breakthrough moments are, it's going to cause some pushback.
That is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful example. And right. I mean, here's this beloved guy that decided in front of his fans to do the one thing that was seen as a sellout. And that there is some pain, but there's also a lot of growth and there's a lot of beauty that comes out of that breakthrough. I mean, Marvin Gaye, What's Going On, you know, that album. I mean, that was a breakthrough. You know what? And I'm going to say something that is timely. Wait a minute. Motown doesn't do that. Motown does love songs and pop songs. Well, no, I'm going to do something different and say something about, you know, Vietnam and say something about civil rights and say something about Black America at the time. So, yeah, no, that Dylan's a great, that's a great, great example.
I think you mentioned earlier about the decision the Beatles made heading into making Sgt. Pepper's, and I know you talked about it in the book. And it seems to me that one of the things that you highlighted was that, first of all, they could have been comfortable for the rest of their lives touring. Like they had it made. They were so popular at that point that they could have easily just stuck with the same thing, but they didn't want to stay with the status quo. They wanted to do something different. But then there's another element to this that they went separate directions for several months and all of a sudden were influenced by these other things. Like they got their own influences and then came back new people in a sense and collaborated and connected. And maybe that's some of the magic of what happened from that point forward with Sgt. Pepper.
Now that's a great point, Dave, because the four of them, you know, John went to go make a movie. Paul worked on a film soundtrack. George went to India, you know, and Ringo at the time was a newborn, newborn dad. So, you know, they all went their different ways. And that's something that, you know, you can make that same connection, you know, for educators. You know, sometimes, you know, when a department or grade level breaks up or, you know, goes your separate ways at summer, you go to retreat, you go to refresh, you go to conferences and or online conferences now, or you participate in a Twitter chat, or you go in to, you know, explore and iterate, you know, and then you come back renewed and refreshed and, hey, I've got this new idea, Dave, that, you know, what if we did this with Teach Like a Pirate? Or, man, you know, hey, Sean, I've got this idea that, you know, we could do this with Makerspace. And I went to this really cool conference, and man, and the Beatles did the same thing. I mean, there is something to be said about that kind of, sometimes it's important, you know, in order to grow, you know, to kind of go in different directions and explore and hang out with different bands and hang out with different folks, and you learn and you grow from that. And the Beatles did that so beautifully. And then look what happened. We, you know, when John went to go make that movie, How I Won the War in Spain, he wrote the song Strawberry Fields, you know, which was kind of one of the templates for the Sgt. Pepper album to experiment and expand and stretch sound and do those things. So there's a lot of delight in that, and a lot of delight that I believe that educators, and it's so important now, especially in the pandemic and everything that's going on, that educators take that time for some SEL, but also to explore and to maybe use some of this kind of new normal that we're in, you know, whether to get involved in the Zoom call or to check out this podcast or whatever to learn from and then bring back.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, and you have talked about, I love this concept of the opening of Sgt. Pepper's and that fanfare and that excitement and wishing that for kids and wishing that for staff. It's like, why can't we have this every day? Why can't kids feel this fanfare, this celebratory moment of coming to school and being a part of this situation? And kind of maybe if you could share some of your thoughts about that.
So I don't know about you, but back before the pandemic, man, I always like those moments before when I go to a movie. I love the sneak previews. I love the smell of popcorn. Or if you and I, we were going to, you know, meet up and go see the Lakers play or something like that. I love all of that kind of hype and that anticipation. And you look around and everybody's excited. And, oh, man, you got the Lakers jersey on, too. Oh, man, me too. Or if we were going to a concert, wow, look, they're wearing the same shirt that we are, you know. And you know, school. You know, school, you know, when we talk about that, it gets a bad rap. But I'm a geek, man. I love school. I love all of the stuff before school, the lining up, the getting, I love the back to school, you know, getting lunch boxes, man. Remember when we were kids in the 70s, man, and like the new cartoons were coming out and they would do like a preview Friday night and all right, kids, go to bed. I love that hype. And I think that school has that same excitement, just like on the Sgt. Pepper album, you know, which the album is like a concert, and you hear like this little fanfare. And I thought, you know, wouldn't that be, we need to have that same mindset as a school, you know, and can we not kick off the day for our kids who in some cases we are the best thing, or in some cases the only thing that is a source of love and joy and inspiration for kids. And we need to reflect that. Just like we put Drop the Needle on the Sgt. Pepper album, or just like we're going, getting ready to see the Lakers play and all that hype. So I am a firm believer in bookends, that there should be a positive beginning or opening, just like the Pepper album. And I also believe there should be kind of a resonating and positive and long lasting crescendo. Just like the Pepper album, you know, kind of ends on this kind of high, but powerful note. School should be the same way, in that same mindset, rather than, all right, welcome to school, stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, hi, how are you? So I believe that bookends in the day should be intentional, bookends in the week, bookends in the month, you know. So I'm very much aware of moments, and I try to, as best as I can, to impart that in the book, and I try to impart that for teachers. So that's I mentioned Celebrate Monday, you know.
Let's go there. So Celebrate Monday, you talk about bookends of the day, bookends of the week. Celebrate Monday is something that you created and founded and has really taken off. And so where did it all come from?
Well, it came from, and I don't know, this is becoming the Todd Whitaker fanboy experience, but it really, I do give him credit for the inspiration in reading one of his books, School Culture Rewired, And I remember I came across a part in that book, you know, how you have the bold parts and like in Teach Like a Pirate and Pepper Effect. There's a book, there's a quote that stands out. And in that book, he said, if you want to bust a culture, try celebrating Mondays. And that stopped me in my tracks, man. I thought, you know, he's right. You know, why does Monday have to be an excuse to have the blues or to be cranky or whatever, when in some cases, like I said, we are the only or best thing for kids. And the kids that some of the kids that I serve live in circumstances that I couldn't last 90 seconds in their skin. You know, we have kids that are going home hungry. We are going we are teaching kids that are going home to situations that aren't pleasant. And so I felt that, why don't we flip the script on the week? Why is it that we look forward to Fridays? Well, of course we do. We get 2 days off, and of course that makes sense. But why not have a positive opening? Why not Monday be that day of the week that we all look forward to coming to school? Why don't we use social media? Because we talked about the naysayers and negativity that's out there. Why don't, you know, instead of, you know, putting up some negative derogatory thing, why don't we use hashtag Celebrate Monday to provide a shout out for a friend or a staff member, or man, look at the great things that are happening in my schoolhouse, or wow, Dave, thank you so much for being there for us at that staff development. So you're my reason to celebrate Monday. And if we kick off that week or kick off that moment in a positive way for kids so that they can see possibilities, or those teachers that are working so hard in concurrent learning and remote learning, and to give them a sense of, hey, the world's okay. We're going to be all right. Monday doesn't have to be a bad day. And we can be that catalyst, if you will, or that ignition, so that we start off Monday on a positive note. Well, yeah, it doesn't end after Monday, y'all. You know, there's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, but it's got to start somewhere, right? As Springsteen says, you can't start a fire without a spark. And so Celebrate Monday is that small spark that is supposed to kind of change the direction and conversation on how we begin school, how we approach school as students, as teachers, as families. So I like to think of it as my love letter to the world. And I'm very fortunate that what started off as a faculty experiment at my first principalship has kind of taken off in ways that I didn't think possible. John Wenstrom, who's a principal that you and I both know and follow on Twitter, he starts off every week with a beautiful assembly on Celebrate Monday, where they're celebrating everyone's gifts in the schoolhouse. Teachers are writing sticky notes. You're my reason to celebrate Monday. And we've got all kinds of just really great and powerful things that I never dreamed possible. Again, I just thought, oh, I want to get my staff on Twitter. I want to change up the culture, but I'm very honored that other great educators, greater educators than me, that I could ever be, have taken those two words and used it to change the conversation on building authentic, dynamic, safe cultures for all kids. And so I'm honored by that.
Yeah, I absolutely love the impact that it's had and how that's taken off. And the episode that dropped just right before this, Make Your Own Snow, talks about creating a movement. And that's something that surely you did with Celebrate Monday. And so I think you're a perfect example of someone who went out there and didn't let the weather dictate how they were going to feel. You made your own snow. And so I think that's a super powerful thing.
Thank you. And I that's one of my favorite pieces of yours, by the way. I love that. So I know we got to keep it G-rated here, but there's a mild expletive that you put in front of that snow that I often reference, you know. So but thank you for, I'm honored to be in the same sentence as that. But that is actually, Dave, that is one of your best works, man. I love that blog post and I love that episode.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. And so what you said about celebrating Monday and the opening and the fanfare and all that, you kind of drew out from the back of the Sgt. Pepper album a single line that kind of got emphasized, and it was, a splendid time is guaranteed for all. Yeah. And that kind of goes to what we're talking about with all of this.
Yeah, man, that's a line off their song Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite, which John Lennon got from a circus poster. But the thing I love about all of there's in that simple line, you know, we don't use the word splendid enough. So you know, for those of you who are not, you know, splendid, you know, something that's pleasant, beneficial, good, you know, time, you know, a splendid time, you know, we're the time that we have together, the moments we have together in the schoolhouse, and guarantee there's a little bit of accountability there, right? So it's incumbent upon us, right, to try to make sure that splendid time in the schoolhouse or for each other is happening. We hold each other accountable for that. And then for all, you know, we talk about equity. It's not just for some. It's not just for the folks in that zip code or that neighborhood. All are invited. All are included. All are welcome. And I get chills unpacking that line when I've done that in the past and talked about that in different capacities, but to me that is you nailed it, man. And that to me is, it's a line that's kind of tossed away, but for some reason, if you look at the back cover of that album, the Beatles have their lyrics there, but that line, "A splendid time is guaranteed for all," is like hidden in the liner notes of the album, you know, the credits. And I always, as a kid, I was always fascinated by that, but I have such an appreciation for that line now more than ever, in this time of great change and unrest and pandemic. And it gives me hope. A splendid time is guaranteed for all. We're going to get there.
Yeah. I love that. Like you said, it has the positive feelings, it has the accountability, that guarantee, and then also the equity of for all that we're talking about, every single person in the schoolhouse.
That's right,
so, man, it really does encapsulate quite a bit. That's great. Now, you are famous for not referring to faculty or staff, but your band, and seeing your fellow colleagues as bandmates. What do you think is significant about that terminology when you would talk about people that are coming together in a schoolhouse?
So when we talk about a band, and we talk about, I'll talk about the Sky Dogs, and you mentioned my old band. So, you know, a band are, you know, these are guys, these are folks that are joined together by a certain purpose. Right. You know, in a band, you know, we all love music. If you're in a band and you don't love music, I don't know why you're in the band. But everybody has a part. Everyone has a role, and it's significant, and it's important, and it's vital, and it's essential. And the thing about a band is you can lean on each other, you know. And so I don't do the whole, the faculty is my family. I don't do, you know, and I might use team, but to me, I think a band is much more of a unifying thing. And when we create music, and music to me is a miracle. Music to me is, I mean, when you take notes and words and harmonies, and you can create these sounds that inspire and uplift and challenge and can make us sad and happy and make us feel good or challenge us like Dylan did, you know? So I try to use that man as kind of a reminder that even though, and again, if you look at my fingers, I have short, stubby fingers. Okay. I'm not a very good guitarist, but you know what? If you are a lead guitarist and I'm your rhythm guitarist, man, I am going to make you, you know, sound great. You are going to make the band better, right? Miles Davis, I love one of his lines where he says, "There's no such thing as mistakes." And what he meant by that was when if somebody in the band would play a mistake or play the wrong note, this is Miles Davis, great jazz trumpeter, man. He would play the mistake. He would play the mistake to make it sound like, well, of course we meant to change this to E flat. Why wouldn't we? And yeah. And again, he loved his colleagues so much. He loved his bandmates so much. Hey, I got you. I'm a cover for you, and we're going to get there. And I'll see you at the Coda, right? So to me, a band is, we talk about band of brothers or sisters, but to me, a band of musicians, these are folks that are united together for the love of music, and they have a shared vision. So I try to echo that as best as I can as a bandmate.
Yeah. And I think a big part of that paradigm too, is the idea that in a band, you don't want five lead guitar players. You don't want five drummers. You don't want, it's the differences and the strengths and talents that each individual person has and how they blend together with each other, which is what is significant. So it's not about creating a bunch of people that are all the same. It's about appreciating those differences and coming together to create something that's magical.
You nailed it. I mean, you know, Ringo Starr would say, and Ringo only did one solo in all of the Beatles' work, because he says, I'm a songwriter's drummer. He never wanted the music when he played with the Beatles. He says, give me the words. My job is to service the song, you know. So, and I mean, there's so many great analogies with that, even in the schoolhouse. So, I appreciate you picking up on that.
Yeah, you know, so you are also, besides the author of The Pepper Effect, besides being a principal, you're also the host of a fantastic podcast, the Principal Liner Notes podcast. I love it. It just relaxes me. Like, you have this calming, soothing voice, and the pacing with the music kind of spliced into it and mixed into it, and some pauses. And it's just like, I always feel better after I listen to an episode. And so I love that. And there's a couple of things I wanted to pull from that to discuss with you.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
And so one of them is, you talk about trapdoor moments and the importance of trapdoor moments. And I'm wondering if you could define for us what a trapdoor moment is, and maybe how you've been able to incorporate some of those trapdoor moments in your life, or some recommendations.
Absolutely. So, you know, if you think about what literally a trapdoor is, it's like a hidden door, you know, it's usually on the floor, and it's a way out, right? And in some ways it's a kind of a play on the word, you know, trap. You know, you're trapped and you're looking for an escape, or what have you. So, there's a great moment in the Beatles movie, A Hard Day's Night, where they're trying to get out of the television studio, and they find a way out, and Ringo joyously says, "We're out." And they romp about and they play Can't Buy Me Love. So I think it's important in any gig, right? And even education, that you find as best as you can to take care of yourself a way out. Right. And we're always looking for that. You know, we're always looking, hey, I need to take a coffee break. But I also think, too, you know, back to Hard Day's Night, it wasn't Ringo looking for his own way out. He was looking at the band. He's like, we're out. So I think it's important that for our thought partners, for our colleagues, for our friends, that we help each other, you know, find that way out. You know, what it may be. You know, hey, Dave, I know that you are, you know, you're running around and you're reviewing copy and you're meeting deadlines or whatever. But hey, how about 5 minutes? You and I get on a Zoom and let's just talk about the essence of A Tribe Called Quest, because I know you dig hip hop and that's your era, man. Let's, you know, or man, I heard this great scene in a movie and I thought of you. Hey, let's text for a second, you know. And we need to find those moments, whatever they may be. And especially if you can find them within the mania, within the day, it's even better. And it just gives you that chance to breathe. And in the pandemic and everything that's going on, we're even more 24/7. In fact, I have two colleagues I refer to as 48/7, because they're putting 48 hours into one day. But I think it's important that you know, as we, you know, we talk about we're all in this together. Well, a way to do that is to find that little trap door for that person, for that thought partner, for that friend, for that bandmate. And hey, come on in for a second. Let's jaunt a little bit on whatever. Man, I just saw this crazy episode of on the CW. Thought of you. Actually, that would be kind of a nice trapdoor moment to be thought of something on the CW. But that's kind of the essence of trapdoor moments. And I talk about that in the podcast a lot. So thank you for sharing that and listening to that.
Yeah. And so kind of maybe ties into a little bit of in The Pepper Effect, you have a section, you talk about carving out Here Comes the Sun space.
Yes.
And when I think about trapdoor moments and carving out Here Comes the Sun space, it's kind of related.
It is.
So maybe if you could discuss that for a second.
So Here Comes the Sun, which is the very famous Beatles song, written by George Harrison, who just as we're recording this, his birthday was was yesterday, and Here Comes the Sun, which again, if you go on Spotify or Apple, it is the most frequently streamed song by the Beatles. It's not a Lennon and McCartney song. Well, he wrote that song playing hooky, so to speak. That was at the time when the Beatles were involved in being businessmen and lawsuits and things, and they formed the company called Apple. Well, George, for whatever reason, decided not to show up for a meeting and split. And he went to, of all places, Eric Clapton's house. Eric Clapton, one of the greatest guitarists of all time. They were friends. And so he, it was a beautiful spring day. According to George, he was in Eric's backyard, his garden, and he saw an acoustic guitar that just happened to be lying around. And he picked up the song and he wrote the song, Here Comes the Sun. And I thought, you know, we talk about white space and dream space or whatever, you know, where we take time. But I thought, wouldn't it be cool if we took a lesson from George? And every now and then, and I'm not saying, you know, walk out on your job, so to speak, all you folks listening, but you do have to carve out not just white space, but Here Comes the Sun space, where it's an intentional time to do something creative or to reflect or to meditate or to just do something for you that is gonna fill your bucket and who knows, you might create your own Here Comes the Sun. So that's a little bit where that comes from. So the Here Comes the Sun space in some ways is like the trapdoor moment, where the Here Comes the Sun space is like your moment, you taking that time to do that. And then the trapdoor space is like that thought partner, that accountability, like, hey, come on, man, I got you. How are you? Let's go play guitars, or let's go for a run or a jog or whatever.
Yeah, I love that. And now you mentioned Eric Clapton. I just saw a quote from Eric Clapton that cracked me up just like I think yesterday.
Yeah.
And so Jimi Hendrix had a big impact on people who saw Jimi Hendrix play. And there's all sorts of legendary stories about people's initial reaction to seeing Jimmy play live. And there was kind of, it was, you know, you hear these legends, like, oh, he's great, all this kind of stuff. And I think Eric Clapton's quote was, and I'll avoid the word, but he said, like, nobody told me how effing good he was going to be. You know, I think another one of the famous quotes is someone said that when they heard Jimmy play, they realized that maybe it was time to quit.
Yes.
And now who was that? Now the, I want to say it was maybe, I don't know if it was Pete Townsend or who it was, but it was.
I think it was Pete Townsend, because Pete Townsend also said that he and Clapton saw, like, Clapton invited him to see Jimi Hendrix. He says, listen, you got to see this guy. You have no idea. And so they went to a club and they saw Hendrix play at this London nightclub. And Townsend said, as soon as Hendrix got on stage, I'll play left-handed because he was left-handed. He grabbed Clapton's hand and they held hands like we were holding on for dear life. Like, oh my God, what are we doing? He says it wasn't like a romantic thing, but we were like, we knew we were a part of something special, but it was like, we got to rethink the whole thing. So yeah, I think Townsend did say, like, he thought about chucking the guitar at one point, but I just love the visual of Clapton and Townsend, you know, these two of their own, you know, great guitarists.
Iconic, yeah.
Like, iconic, yeah. Guitarists. And they see Hendrix, you know, who was at that time, this is before Purple Haze, because, you know, and all that. And then they hear him. And then we both held hands like,
this guy's on a different level.
This guy's on a different level. Yeah,
this is a different plane from the universe.
Different universe, man.
Currently. Yeah. And so actually one of my favorite scenes in the History of Rock and Roll DVD series is Townsend talking about being backstage and wanting to go on stage before Jimmy, because nobody wants to follow Jimmy. Like,
no.
You know, if you're a guitarist or just a musician of any type, you don't want to follow Jimmy. And so they wanted to go, and it came down to a coin toss, and the Who won the coin toss and got to go on stage before Jimmy, because Pete Townsend didn't want to follow him. Jimmy was on a different level.
He was. And that was the Monterey Pop Festival, I think you're talking about. And you know, the Who destroyed their instruments and yeah, they did not want to follow. No one wanted to follow Hendrix. And think about Hendrix, man, he was a real humble guy. You know, that was the thing. He was great. And there are things, I mean, there's nowhere, I can't even, I can't figure out his music as a guitarist. And there are a lot of folks that are into that, but you know, that's Hendrix, man, just a different level. And sadly, you know, he wasn't with us long. But man, he 3 studio albums, which are always in the top 10 list or top 100 or whatever. And we're still trying to figure him out, and we're still trying to learn from him. I never, you know, obviously Hendrix was around before I was born, but I did have the opportunity to see The Who, and long time ago. And Pete Townsend, what an incredible guitarist. I've seen Clapton as well. But it's funny, just those two guys were like, there's another story, I think, where Hendrix broke his guitar string and in the middle of a show, and Clapton was in the audience. He said, is Eric here? Is Eric here? I need him to restring my guitar. Eric was like, I don't mind, you know, whatever. Cause he respected Clapton, you know, like Clapton was, it wasn't like, no, restring my guitar. You lackey. No, you understand guitar. You understand what I want to do. I respect you. You know, it was, and just very, very cool.
Well, I think that points to something that I've found to be true in all circles, whether it's education, music, sports, where people that are committed, who love the game, love the music, love educate, whatever it might be, and excel at it, respect others who do the same. And so when you see some of this social media hate in whatever field it is, it's rarely from the people that are excelling in the field that hate is coming from, because most people who excel in the field and who are really passionate about the field, they understand what it takes to be at that level and the commitment. And there's a certain level of respect and dignity that goes along with that.
No, I'm with you, man. And Clapton, again, it's the Clapton effect. You know, he played on the Beatles' While My Guitar Gently Weeps, and George invited him, George Harrison. And Clapton said, nobody plays on Beatle records. You don't want me, you know, and he was so, you know, because he was in awe of the Beatles. But I'm with you. You know, I think in the space, let's face it, if we're all in education, right, in various levels, and our hope, like one big band, is that in the band of education, we are all doing or attempting to do good for kids. We're attempting to do good for the world. And so if there is another school, another principal, another gig that is doing that better than me, and trust me, there are, you know, I take joy in that, because we're all working towards the same end. And the greats in sports, the greats in music, the greats in art, the greats in whatever field, I love when folks get that and demonstrate that, and exude that, and you know, perhaps in education, I know we're competitive and standardized tests, and we got to be number one, and we got to do this, that, and the other, but I kind of appreciate seeing other folks be better than me and do better than me and be successful, because I know in the long run, you know, they're making an impact on somebody. They're, again, if we're talking about education, we're trying to make kids better. We're trying to make the world better and schools better. And I'm glad to be a part of that, you know, in whatever way.
And have an appreciation for other paths to the same goal, and realizing that not everybody has to do it the same. In fact, we probably shouldn't all do it the same, right? And that because someone has a different philosophy on education than you do, that's maybe something to be curious about, as opposed to be something to be threatened by. And so maybe there's something we could learn from them. And I think the Beatles are an example of that. You mentioned that the Beatles had some wide influences, and they drew inspiration from rhythm and blues and soul, and from the sitar, and like all these different things, you know, from India and all these different areas, and came forward. And you mentioned that nobody plays on a Beatles album, but I was listening to you talk about that they gave credit to Billy Preston
Right on, man.
For playing on the Beatles album. And that was at a time when that was something that wasn't really done, and kind of that impact. And that kind of ties into something else I wanted to ask you about. And that is maybe since the pandemic started and since post George Floyd, there's been a couple times on your podcast where you spoke in a much more vulnerable way about your background and being a Black educator. And how has the social unrest of this past summer kind of brought up some of those emotions and feelings for you?
Well, I appreciate you asking that, and I'm happy to share that. And we probably need 5 other hours, but I would say, I tell you, man, that moment with George Floyd, and you relive a lot of things. And for me, and you know, I've been the brunt of a lot of vicious and undue, you know, racism and racial epithets. So for me, it was a lot of reliving that, and some stuff coming up. The other thing too is it also sharpens my responsibility and the mantle that I carry and the mantle that my father passed on to me and his father, you know what I'm saying? And so it is still very painful because we're not there. You know, I'll go there for a second, and everyone's probably either, if they haven't turned off by George Floyd, you know, they're going to turn off now because let's think about this in 2021, Dave, January 6th, and how we felt, or there was many individuals who felt it was okay to wave a Confederate flag. You know, people felt that was okay, that was tolerable. You know, so where my head is. You know, at what point, you know, because with George Floyd, there are thousands of him. There are thousands. There are tens of thousands before him, that were subjected to that. And so, where my head as a Black educator is, when is enough going to be enough, and is it ever going to be enough? What is the threshold? What is the point where we all go, whoa, flag on the play? Wow. Now, I thought 1992, Rodney King. Oh, wait a minute. We're going to have a big time out, and we're going to lean into this.
Yeah, that was like the time we're like, oh, this time it's on video. We've got for sure this time.
Yeah,
we're going to stop this, and then we saw what happened.
But you know, I'm 50. I'm proud to be 50. But I can tell you, you know, I can fill up hours and hours of times where in where I've been subjected to things, not at the level of George Floyd. But again, that's where I'm at. What is going to be that threshold? When are we all going to feel that sense of justice and inclusion? And so from my standpoint, you know, I don't want to I'm not talking about tolerance. I'm talking about empathy. I'm talking about understanding. I'm talking about equity, where we need to be leaning into as educators, providing not only quality, but rigorous and innovative experiences for all kids. Because if we don't see our kids as future world changers, that's how I do, you know, I refer to faculty as man, I refer to students as they are the future world changers. You know, if we don't see them as somebody that is going to be the next Hendrix or the next Beatles or the next Mahatma Gandhi, or the next Susan B. Anthony, or the next Kamala Harris, or now they're really going to turn it off now if I mention Kamala Harris, but maybe there's folks that are tuning in, but you know what I'm saying?
My audience is going to tune out. Don't worry.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying, man? You know, so it hurts. You know, I'm in mourning, you know, I'm in mourning about a lot of things, and but that last summer was hard, and it was hard to see that and to feel that. But January 6th was hard as well. And I think all the more reason the mantle that we carry as educators, the burden that we carry as educators is so important. You know, splendid time is guaranteed for all. You know. And we got to be in tune with that, and tune with the kids that we serve, and know that they're going to carry that mantle. And I hope that my daughters, I hope that your children don't have to live through something like a George Floyd or January 6th and all of these things. I hope they figure it out. I hope, man.
Well, listen, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for that vulnerability on your podcast. And for those of you that are listening, you know, I highly recommend go back and find those episodes from Sean and the principal's liner notes, mm-hmm. and hear some of those stories. And there's also a positive lining to those episodes as well,
yeah.
of a kind of a path forward and a way out. And I think that's super important, is that we can talk about we can talk about hard stuff, but we can also, like you said, bookend. Let's have fanfare, but let's also talk about tough stuff and do hard work. And then let's leave on positive notes too. And I think that's something you do a really good job on those podcast episodes. So I appreciate that vulnerability and openness in those episodes.
Thanks, man. I'm honored by that. I'm grateful for that. Thank you for tuning into that. It's all intentional, you know. So I'm glad you pick up on that. And those are good outlets. And again, you know, I'm grateful for that. Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, so I want to talk about something a little fun, real quick here.
You got it.
And that I can with great assurance say that The Pepper Effect is the only book that I have ever published and that I ever will publish that has been turned into a musical.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
How in the world did this come to be? Give us the scoop on The Pepper Effect, the musical.
Yeah, that, you know, I didn't set out to write the book. I mean, we talk about manifesto, and, you know, part of that, you know, when I pitched the book to you, is like, I don't know if I'll ever write anything else again, but this is what's on my heart. And I want to be able to share that. So I'm grateful for that platform. But, you know, and of course I have these wild dreams that the book is going to land in Tom Hanks's hands, and he's going to, you know, or Paul, you know, really the dream is Paul McCartney and Ringo are going to read the book and hopefully, you know, come and visit me one day, or we'll start a band together. But, you know, hey, Tom Hanks, if he wants to make a movie and adapt to The Pepper Effect, you know, and even though that's a great dream, an even better thing happened that I did not dream possible. And there's a wonderful, wonderful school in Ontario, Tecumseh Elementary School. And I didn't know they were doing this. And I have a friend of mine up there that said, you know, there's this school that's adopted The Pepper Effect as like their year round theme. And of course, you know, there've been, you know, you've been on the receiving end of that. This is the Teach Like a Pirate year, and we're going to adopt the principles and the hooks, so to speak, of Dave Burgess. And so I was really great. I'm like, wow, I didn't think The Pepper Effect would be like a school theme. That's really cool. Well, then the drama club of that school took the book and took the elements of that book. And I remember texting you, I'm crying, you know, and I was so, I'm going to start crying now, because every time I think about that, I just think, I never in my wildest dreams. And in fact, again, I'm sure Tom Hanks adapted the book, but for a school and for kids, this just weren't teachers. These were kids that wrote, produced, and staged the book, you know. And I was really, really moved by that. I was fortunate. They sent pictures and some of the clips and again, that's the whole thing. All we do, kids are at the center of our heart, and for them to take that book and for the teacher later on I got in on a Zoom call with them, man, and that's a moment that I will never forget for the rest of my life. And again, I'm not the Beatles, man. I'm not. But for the kids to share in the joy that I have for that music and for how that band, those four guys from Liverpool, little bar band, changed my world and helped give me a voice. And in turn, for them to get to them again, getting emotional, Dave.
Yeah, well, it's an emotional thing. I think it points to the fact that as creators, we have no idea the impact of our work, it will have in the world. And when you have the courage to create and to not just create, but then to put your work out into the world, which is a scary place. We've talked about the naysayers, the haters, all different things. But at the same time, you have the opportunity to have that larger impact, that mightier purpose, to create those ripples where you have no idea where they're going to go. You don't know what shore they're going to reach that is so far out of your sight when you create something that you can't possibly imagine it. And here you are writing a book about your love of the Beatles and your love of education, and then a group in another country is turning it into a musical. I mean, this is like, it's really a pretty exceptional thing.
It is, and I hope my dream is to get up there. It really is a special school. I still see them on every Monday. They celebrate Monday. It is. You're right. We don't know the significance of our impact, and it's real simple, right? To make a ripple, it's real simple to drop that pebble into the ocean or into a pond, and that ripple reverberates and has an impact. And the Beatles did that for me. You know, you do that for me. Education does that for so many. But we don't, you know, and so that to me is a miracle. I didn't think, and it's better than Tom Hanks adapting the book, right? Now, if he does, we won't turn him away, right, Dave? But
we will not turn him away if that is the case. Yeah, for sure. Okay, so last topic.
Bring it.
I am 54 years old. You're 50, I believe. Is that correct?
I am 50. 5-0, yes. Brother.
And you know what? Both of us, I'm just going to say it, Sean. We look quite a bit better than we did a little bit ago. And we're both on that over 50 and over fitness grind. And you look fantastic. I see your posts all the time. You're getting up in the morning. You're crushing it. And so, you know, when did that transition happen for you? Where did you get that motivation from? And like, how have you seen that impact your life?
Well, I, 50, and thank you, man. I'm inspired by you. I mean, we do look a little bit better. You know, probably the next time we get together and go to the Brazilian steakhouse, Dave, we may be going to the salad bar first.
You won't see me there, Sean. That's why I work out so hard. So I don't have to go there.
That is one of the benefits. But I would say, you know, for me, the principal gig, is education is a tough gig. So I wanted to bring more peace and balance into my life, and that may be another podcast, because I do believe those are things that I try to aspire to have, and peace in all things, and then balance between joy and work and all those things. So I wanted to go into my 50s not, you know, crying and like looking at myself going, geez, what happened to you and all that. I had a goal that I wanted to lose 50 pounds by the time I turned 50. And I was going to do it the old fashioned way of just moderation and exercise and balancing my diet. So, but also I wanted to just be, I felt like I wasn't being a better person for others and for my family. And I think that's a lot of what that, my wellness journey has done, you know, and I'm very grateful that I was able, you know, with the love of my family and guys like you. I guess the great thing about social media too, we can cheer each other on and support each other and look out for each other. And that's what bandmates do, right? That's what neighbors do. So that's kind of what I did. It was hard as hell. I still love a good bacon double cheeseburger every now and then. You know, I love a great, you know, big fat steak every now and then. But again, I wanted it to just kind of do it for my own internal wellness. And I was able to kind of lose the weight and maintain that peace and balance. And I got to do it every day. It's good. It's good on so many levels. It's reduced anxiety, stress, and it's helped me become just a better person for others. So I'm grateful for you because you're crushing it too, man. And I know you've had your setbacks along the way, but we're not getting any younger. And so I want 50 to be like the new 30.
I think it is. And I love what you said about it's not just a scale weight, right? It's about wellness. It's about feeling better. It's about that balance, that peace of mind, and all these different things that it can bring us. And I guess I should send a shout out to Jen Burtis, another DBC author.
Oh God, yeah.
For her assistance in helping so many also embrace that wellness and fitness and all that. And she does a fantastic job. And we both have a garage gym. We both get in there and throw some stuff around and get things done. And
we do.
So I'm inspired by watching your journey as well. And so Sean, let me just tell you, you are someone who just makes the world a better place. I always feel better after talking to you, always feel better after interacting with you on social media, seeing your posts. And you're just one of the true good guys in education. And it's been an absolute pleasure to publish your book and to work with you and to still stay connected. And post-pandemic, I'm hoping that we can connect face-to-face again sometime soon. Hit up another one of those Brazilian steakhouses. And I just really appreciate you coming on the show.
Well, Dave, thank you so much. And I'm grateful for your support and your kinship and all that you do and give for education. And thank you for believing in a crazy dream about, hey, I got this idea about the Beatles and education and Celebrate Monday. And, you know, we'll see what happens, you know. And so thank you. And it's an honor to be a part of the DBC band, man.
Absolutely. Really, and you know what? We are in from the start. We love the concept and we still love it. And so check out Principal's Liner Notes podcast.
Yes.
Principal Liner Notes podcast. The Pepper Effect. You can get it anywhere you buy your books. And also, if people want to connect with you, Sean, where are the best places to go?
The best places to go in the socially distanced environment. I do like to hang out on Twitter. And so they can follow me on Twitter at SM Gaillard, SMGAILLARD. I will follow back. I will engage. I will help however I can and learn. Instagram is also, it's the same handle, SM Gaillard. And that's another place. If you follow me, get ready for a lot of Celebrate Monday and when I'm listening to music and crazy gym selfies, or just me in the cold garage gym going, why am I here? But those are the places. And of course, the Principal Liner Notes podcast, which is another great place. People can leave messages or notes or what have you. So I'm happy to be anybody's bandmate and support and champion, and however I can be of that help and support for others, I'm happy to do it.
Awesome. Well, give Sean a follow on social media, pick up the Pepper Effect, make sure you subscribe to his podcast. It's fantastic. And it's going to just leave a little bit of positivity in your life each episode. And thank everyone for listening to the Dave Burgess Show. And we will see you next week. Thank you so much for listening to the Dave Burgess Show. Let's connect. I am at Burgess Dave on Twitter. My name just flipped around to Burgess Dave. On Instagram, I am DBC_INC, and I blog at DaveBurgess.com. Please share your thoughts and comments on social media using the hashtag DaveBurgessShow. It would mean the world to me if you share the show with friends and colleagues, and I would be honored if you left a positive review on whatever platform you listen on. Hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. And if you have a question, a topic, or a guest recommendation for the show, just email me at dave@daveburgess.com, put podcast question in the subject line, and I absolutely cannot wait to join you on the next episode.